Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Friday, October 4th, 2024. How's everybody doing? So, this is what happens. You upload everything and you forget to hit publish. So, if you're wondering why I did not have a podcast last night, I forgot to hit publish. We were here, and it was the video. A lot going on out there. So what have I been doing today? I've been doing learning, right? Head of our network, Jay Allen, on the Rated R Safety Show said about a month ago, sometimes you got to take a break and learn, right? Basically, he didn't say it exactly like that, but that's basically what he said. So we were involved in some learning of new technology, new methods, and everything else, and we're looking to do a major computer upgrade here in the next week or so, right? Just stuff breaking down, you know, kids getting older, that sort of thing, and everyone needing their own computer. So as part of our making sure I'm on the air. As part of our, security measures here, we have a rule here because, in our house, because we have, we read, we watch, we observe, we learn. So a couple of years ago, what's the rule? I'm going to share it with you. If this story is up there. Right before showtime, I deleted everything. I closed everything out. Our school district, the Clarkstown School District, they hand out, this started during COVID. They realized that a lot of folks do not have their, computers. So you have two or three kids in the house, one from a lot of families, and you do not, and everybody's working at home during COVID, and nobody could, really was able to. You have the parents working from home, then you have the kids working from home. Most parents are not entrepreneurs like us here, so they only have one computer or two computers, one for the husband, one for the wife, or one for each parent, whatever we're going to call them. I understand political correctness and everything else. What happened was they went and they got a grant, and all of the kids get a computer, one of the lower-end computers, but it's enough to do your schoolwork. So you have word processing you do on there, some spreadsheets, and a lot of the different education software that you're able to do. But it's always in the back of my mind. We're going to go back a couple of years here. And this is from October 21st, 2010 on CBSNews.com. And this is last February, the Lower Merion School District outside Philadelphia came under fire for using laptop webcams to look in on students at home. Last week, the school district set a legal action stemming from those actions. As CBS correspondent Michelle Miller reports, Blake Robbins was a sophomore when he got to take home a school-issued laptop. Little did he know, officials at the Harrington High School were watching him via webcam. And it goes on and on and on and on. You're in a room. And again, this is 14 years ago now, and this actually happened like 16 years ago. where you're in the room. I think all of us know smart technology now, like a couple of brands of smart TVs, so they actually have microphones and some cameras, from what I've heard. Definitely microphones. And one of the variants has in there, don't stand in front of the thing, naked sort of thing, you know, in the instruction manual. And they actually go and they were spying on the kids. And it wasn't, I don't think, anything nefarious, meaning that they wanted to catch the kids doing, you know, shameful things that would really embarrass them in their bedroom. But it was along the lines of, they were, you know, the fact that they were doing this, watching kids. Get it? And how is that going to be used? Once you can't unsee things. You cannot unhear things. Most people can't unhear things or unsee things. I just ignore a lot of the stuff that I see out there because I don't have time to deal with baloney or guvno, bull guvno. But anyway, and that's always in the back of my mind. So what's the rule that we have? The school computer is to be used for school work. Period. End of discussion. If they have to log on to any program, like they have, I'll give them a plug here, Google, or they have, all everyone has a Google account, a school account there, they are not to put that on a family computer. We have family, and we have school. Maybe you have the same type of thing where this is for work, this is for school. And a lot of smaller businesses like mine don't, they have an old computer at home. They have an employee or a consultant that they're working with. Here, use this computer, right? Here, use this computer. And they don't really wipe the computer clean. So what I do is I have a project going on now. Someone's using a computer of mine. Before they get that computer is completely wiped clean, and they're on their own separate account. So they got their thing going on in the job. I have my thing going on at all the other projects. I often was able to get where I had several projects going on at one time, and then we had several computers, right? And what I would then do is every project has their own computer, and they were all, you know, one project to this facility, one project to this facility. Why? Because I don't want to mix confidential information and everything between computers. And when I started working with companies in Europe, that are based in Europe, they were real big on cybersecurity. So this is one of the reasons why people say, well, the school would never, ever, ever spy on children. Well, guess what? They did it here back in 2010. And the other thing is this, as I'll point out what the other wars says, you know, you can say the other wars. The other wars says, now the other website was wars in their name. We're only questioning people who lie, who are proven liars. So trust but verify. And my, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like that, but I'm just going to tell you the way it is with this. With this, a lot of news going on today here, and it's like, where do we begin here? And we're going to kick on over to Voice of America News and some of the other websites there. So federal agencies warn, and this is from the Epoch Times, federal agencies warn of potential violence on first anniversary of Hamas attack on Israel. Now, this is a topic near and dear to us in this household in Clarkstown, New York, where I reside here. We have a very large Jewish population here, whether they're Reformed, they're Orthodox, or they're, I believe it's called the Haravi, the Hasidic Jewish or ultra-Orthodox. There are many different names. Very big on that here. And we've seen an increased police presence throughout the entire town over the last couple of days with the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And what we're finding, my daughter says to me, Daddy, why are all these police out here? I took her out for run a couple errands today. All the schools are shut. And she said, and I said, well, this is what's going on. And her, my mother my mother, her mother goes and speaks. We explain what the situation is with this thing. I mean, there's police all over the place, and apparently, this is all from the federal agencies that are warning of potential violence on the first anniversary of a Hamas attack on Israel. And FBI and the Department of Homeland Security has issued a statement warning of potential violence on the first anniversary of October 7th. We have here, let me share this here. Hold on. I got to do a share screen. And I am real bad about cleaning off the desktop of everything on here. So let me do that first. And, okay, I'm going to do share screen for you viewers at home. And, all right. So here we have the FBI issued a warning here, alert number I-100424 PSA, October 4th, dated today, 2024. The Federal Bureau of Investigation and Department of Homeland Security are issuing this PSA to highlight potential threats in the United States for a variety of actors in response to the one-year anniversary of the Hamas attacks on Israel. The FBI and DHS assess the one-year anniversary of the October 7, 2023 attacks that initiated the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict. Now, before we go on here, all right, let me say this. There are people out there, college professors, and a couple of other things that say this never happened, by the way. So this is the FBI that said it happened. So you go with it what you want, right? I had I was having a conversation with a fellow business owner who owns a little luncheonette in the area. One of his employees, who he trusts, she's a college student. She went to college, and one of her professors said that this never happened. And I said, I don't believe you. Well, guess what? The woman was in the back, the young lady in the back. She came in. Oh, yeah, this never happened. This is all a bunch of bullocks. This is all a bunch of guvno. This didn't happen because my professor said it didn't happen. So if you think that there are not people in the university system and throughout our society that think that that are dangerous, guess what? That's a dangerous person. This is along the lines of people denying the Holocaust. By the way, you don't know, I think I know this. I had people deny that my family had 13 people killed in the Soviet concentration camps during World War II. There are people like that. Believe me. There are people out there that say slavery didn't happen. Or slavery was a wonderful institution. There are people that fouled up in our society. And that really is one of the fronts on the safety war. What we're trying to do is push back ignorance and maybe have some intelligence here. I digress. All right. So what they're saying, over the past year, we have observed violent extremist activity and hate crimes in the United States linked to the conflict. Jewish, Muslim, or Arab institutions, including synagogues, mosques, and Islamic centers and community centers, and large public gatherings such as memorials, vigils, and other lawful demonstrations, present attractive targets for violent attacks or for hoax threats by a variety of threat actors, including violent extremists and hate crime. Although such actors may view the anniversary as an opportunity to conduct an attack or other high-profile illegal activity. FTOs, whatever that stands for, FTOs, foreign terrorist organizations, and other violent extremists will likely continue to exploit narratives related to their conflict, and they may not be correct narratives, and call for lone attacks to attackers to conduct violence in the U.S. Online messaging associated with FTOs and other violent extremists highlighting the one-year anniversary of the October 7th attacks could motivate threat actors across ideologies, including those who espouse violent anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, to engage in violence. Individuals inspired by this online messaging could act alone to commit an attack. So this is all from everything, and they have contact info. If you know that something's going to happen, dial 911, report it. Or, no, they have other online resources here with that. So, again, we are seeing an increased police presence in our community here, telling everybody to remain vigilant. And, no, just, believe me, hey, look, we could disagree. Just don't be stupid about things. Here, really. Going on with that, we're going to go over to VOA News right now. Okay. And this is Voice of America News. This is all non-copyrighted open source information from the feds. Collective trauma marks the anniversary of Hamas attack on Israel. As the conflict in Gaza enters its second year, the World Health Organization is calling for an end to the unspeakable suffering of civilians in Israel and the region and for healthcare to be protected and not attacked. The WHO says the horrific attacks by Hamas militants and other armed groups in Israel on October 7th of last year touched off events that have caused tens of thousands of civilian deaths and injuries, as well as the displacement of millions of people in Israel, Gaza, the West Bank, and now Lebanon. Dr. Michael Tiernan, special representative to Israel, told journalists at a briefing in Geneva Friday that for Israel, the October 7th massacres mark an event as significant and agonizing as the 9/11 attacks against the World Trade Center. Yeah, per capita, I believe it, maybe more when you average it out for people versus victims. Since October 2023, there have been at least 516 attacks on healthcare in Gaza, including 765 deaths resulting in. So, again, violence on both sides. I'm advocating for a quick and speedy end to this here with this. And let's not forget, there's a lot of human suffering out there that we need to really curtail. And we're going to go to our first commercial break. People are saying, you're not taking enough break. Well, okay, our first commercial break, advertisements here. And by the way, if you want to advertise, we do take advertisements here.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Okay, and
avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe. Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1 of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1, the employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2, an employee was exposed to that hazard. 3, that hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4, feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive, monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Posel and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents. Conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
Okay, so we are back. I don't know. I apologize to you folks on Safety FM, the live network. I don't know exactly what happens. It hasn't cut out like that in about 3 or 4 weeks, but it seems to combine things going. I just had to reset some stuff here.
OSHA recordables.
I forgot.
Catastrophic losses. Environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yeah, so I get yelled at when I don't do that. Why didn't you put the thing in? Why doesn't your son do anything? I don't know. Yeah, gotta ask him with this. Uncertainty clouds North Carolina's 2024 election after Helene. So, Helena. So, anyway, there is a lot of stuff that goes into this. We don't really consider that with the when there's a natural disaster. So, and this is where the stuff of conspiracy theories starts. Uncertainty clouds North Carolina's 2024 election after Helena. Here's what we know. The area, and this is from the Epoch Times, the area impacted by the storm is significantly more. Why? You can see where AI is writing stuff here. The area is significantly more Republican than Democrat, the state election board shows. So, as we know, I believe, and I kind of do an election special here. Well, as we get closer, officials in North Carolina warned that voting in some parts of the battleground state might be impacted due to Hurricane Helena's impacts. Well, yeah, they're missing voters, unfortunately, here. I think that the fatality rate, the casualty rate, is going to go way, way up here in the next couple of weeks. Unfortunately, from what I've heard on the ground, I do have some sources on the ground. Nobody wants to go there, wants to come on the air. Everyone's afraid, right, with this, that this is going to really impact the election. So, this is the other thing that this is why I don't like mail-in voting. People mail their votes in, and then they die between the time that they mail it and between election day. What do you do with that? Right. It's just the way it is. And by the way, we get people here all the time saying that there is no election fraud. Well, people are getting convicted all the time of it. And I think it's been in the last 3.5 years. And as we like to point out here, there were cases out there where people were not allowed. Well, I mean, political parties are not allowed to do certain things by court order. So, with that, namely the Republican Party got its rear end in a sling back in the 1980s, and it precluded them from talking about stuff. Well, what are you talking about, Jim? Well, we'll save it for later on here. Don't have to talk about everything here. So, how is it going to impact the election? I don't know with that. So, again, that's another safety wars, right? Grandparents found hugging one another after fallen tree killed them in their South Carolina home. As Hurricane Helena roared outside, the wind howling and branches snapping, John Savage went to his grandparents' bedroom to make sure they were okay. We heard one snap, and I remember going back there, checking on them. 22-year-old set of his grandparents, and they were both fine. The dog was fine, but not long after, they heard a vroom and the sound of one of the biggest trees on the property in Beech Island, South Carolina, crash on top of his grandparents' bedroom, killing them. This almost happened during Superstorm Sandy here. A massive tree fell on my neighbor's house, and they obviously automatically lost power, and the older couple, had to climb through a tree in the dark that fell, that basically fell in their hallway and cut the house in half. Basically, nobody was killed. It's a miracle. But she had long-term PTSD issues with that. I know she was got help and eventually made a good recovery, as good as you can expect. It was just a complete nightmare. So what I've done because of that, and here it was very common. It was very common for every time there was a storm, there was a power outage. So to their credit, the utility companies around here, the main utility company, went through and they clear-cut after, it was two years in a row. We had an October Halloween storm, and then the next, right where they canceled Halloween. And then the next year, they had another storm, Superstorm Sandy, and then they had another, right, all through here. So we had Halloween canceled and things of that nature. And what ended up happening was most of the trees that were going to fall, fell. What happened in this neighborhood was the same thing. In our old neighborhood, Chestnut Ridge, right down the road here, one road was closed for months because they lost hundreds of trees along one stretch of road, and that was where all... That was where the chief land was, and that's where they had all the power lines for the town going through. So that was a nightmare. What they did here, right around the corner here, was the utility took, and it was on the town land. They went about 100 feet from the side of the road to into the woods, and they just clear cut that whole area. Because that's where a lot of the power lines were and things of that nature. And that was when they realized that was one of the main access ways into town. One of the problems that we've had here in the Northeast, this sounds like I'm going into the woods, but I'm really not. I pointed this out on a couple of interviews I did over the years. We had, if you go into central New Jersey, you had Washington, you have Washington's Lookout over in the Watchung Mountains. And on a clear day, you can see from that mountain to New York City. It's like 14, 15 miles. Now, when Washington was there during the Revolutionary War, all of that area was clear cut and was farms. That's not what the case is today. We have suburbs, we have neighborhoods, there are no farms. You may have a couple of parks. But they were observing. Reported, according to history, the Washington was observing troop movements of the British from there out of New York, and apparently most had some really good telescopes back then and during the Revolution, but they were able to observe going all the way out. You can't, right? So everything was clear-cut. Another minor cause of the American Revolution was this. Today we're used to having coal, right? First it was coal when coal was discovered. In huge deposits, we started to use coal. We had biomass, wood, and you had a whole bunch of other things going on. You had New York, New Amsterdam, and then New York City. You had Hartford, Connecticut. You had Philadelphia. You had the Norfolk area, that whole area there. And going down the coast, all these major settlements and cities, Boston. Well, guess what? You're going to be using a lot of agricultural products, and not only to feed people, but for building ships, because we have mercantilism, things getting sent over to England. There's a point here. You had people burning wood for fuel, primarily, and The forests with easily accessible wood were being cleaned out, right, across the 13 colonies, and it was forbidden to go past the original 13 colonies. Everything was clear-cut. Literally, everything clear-cut for farm, for wood, and everything. Everything accessible. So that was a minor part of the revolution was land use issues. Now, what happened was late 1800s, we still had farms, right? We have the Trenton Makes the World Takes Bridge in New Jersey here. And that was put in because 50 miles around that, from that bridge, from Trenton, was like a majority of the industry, right? Even going into the late 1800s, early 1900s here. So all this area was clear cut. Now we have the situation where things are being reforested. So, for example, the Stokes Forest in northern New Jersey, those are all very young trees, relatively. And you have ancient trees and ancient growth in this country. You go to Europe, a lot of those trees are pretty old, and you know, and everything else. There are some of the northern country, I believe it was Sweden, reforested a whole areas here. So this is what we did here. Everything's been reforested. And then the suburbs came after World War II. So these areas that were reforested, or maybe they were the suburban areas were built right on top of these farms, old farms, they planted trees. How long does an oak tree live? 70 to 100 years. So now we're coming into the 70-year thing. A lot of these trees are at the end of their life cycle. And we also had a lot of blights come through, mainly the ash tree blight that's impacting us right now. We also have had the Japanese beetles and things that come through here. A lot of these trees are dying off. So what's my point here? What I did after my neighbor's experience and after the experience of Superstorm Sandy, any tree around the house that could threaten the house, I had removed. Same thing at my parents' house. Every tree that could impact the house was removed. Why we do not want a tree fall? I like trees. Believe me, I like trees. I'm replanting the trees in other areas of the properties here. I'm not, you know, because we take down, we kind of put back. That's what I was taught. So, but anyway, a lot of the, so what do? You look around in your area, in your house, what you want to do, your property. Take down the trees that are going to impact you if you can. It's an expensive notion. The other next thing you do, fires. Do you have fire material around the house? I don't mean do you stack your wood pile on your house, even though that's not necessarily a good thing, usually. But around, do you have any accumulation of biomass? Something to consider for disasters. Because I tell you what, they have not had a controlled burn in a lot of neighborhoods in northern New Jersey ever, right? Since they were converted from dairy farms and other farms to suburban. And in some of those forested areas that I go into and I hang out in, you got 1 foot, 2 foot of biomass, leaves, trees, and everything else. I could see one day that lighting up when the conditions are right, and we're going to have one hell of a problem. So this is some of the stuff that you got to learn from this. I'm not blaming victims or anything else. That's not what the point is. It's all part of your disaster preparation stuff. Preparing your property in the event of an emergency. Now, the stuff going on in North Carolina, that's like a nuclear bomb going off. I'm sorry. There's not too much you can do about that. Can you build capacity? Yeah, I guess. Here, maybe you could have a bug-out location, a relative, a friend, something like that that you can stay with, evacuate to. Maybe they have the duplicates. Maybe you have files over at their place where things up in a cloud somewhere where you have important documents. things of that nature. But there's a lot of stuff going on there that you can do outside of that. So what I did, anything that could impact the house was removed, right? That's just the way, what I did, because I don't want a tree falling on the house with that. Now, here's something else. This is also from the Epoch Times, right? Hurricane Helene stirs up yellow jackets and bees, requiring epinephrine distribution. So not only is the regular healthcare stuff overloaded because of what's going on, but also weird things going on. So now you have a lot of this area flooded. The bees came out from there. Maybe that some of them were already end of the summer here. Maybe that they were already doing their thing. Whatever they do in the winter, they hibernate or whatever. I'm not a entomologist, even though I knew a very prominent one was my professor in college, Jamie Cromartie, rest in peace. Head of the American Entomological Society. But all this stuff coming up, now you have Benadryl and epinephrine issues. They're running out of it for those allergic to bees things. I found out I developed a little bit of an allergy when I got stung by 10 bees over the summer in my legs. Right? I was never able to get the stinger out of some of those areas. But so it could happen. Again, the standard first aid kit does not have this stuff in it. So you need to have stuff in it for allergies if you have them, or just have them and could work dealing with someone. Again, the stuff that does not end up in first aid kits that should. So we're going to take our second commercial break here. It's 8:37, and we'll come back to you. Maybe we'll have a little longer break here.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
I'm sure you've heard the news. Safety training is evolving, and you should be too. Outdated safety training isn't just boring, it's dangerous. If your safety trainer is still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety from 25 years ago, it's time for a change. Imagine safety training that actually addresses the hazards unique to your workplace. No more generic, one-size-fits-all solutions. The Safety Wars team at SafetyWars.com is here to revolutionize how you approach safety with customized training that's relevant, engaging, and effective. Contact Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. Say goodbye to outdated safety training and hello to a safer, more productive environment. Visit SafetyWars.com now.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
Okay. One day, maybe one day, I can put together a promo like Jay Allen there. We'll see how it goes. I mean, that was with the last one. Here you go.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
All right. A little bit audio effects there. So we're going to mosey on over to the EPA website here. Department of Labor has nothing going on today other than U.S. They're approving $5 million in initial funding here. Now, I don't know whether OSHA went into a consultation mode or not. I haven't been able to find anything on that end here, but I'll Google it here real quick. OSHA enforcement is suspended. No, nothing was here. I mean, it's just, you know, usually during these big things is that they don't, it goes into your consultation mode. And then everyone says, well, now we don't have to obey anything. And ha, 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 we're going to show you up, you safety people. All right, great. Great, you know. And they end up doing stuff. So EPA has, hold on. EPA has issued a whole bunch of stuff here, and I just lost it. Hold on. On hurricane response to Hurricane Helene. So here we have, on September 24th, Hurricane Helene made landfall in Florida's Big Bend region as a Category 4 storm before moving into Georgia with continued catastrophic Category 2 winds early Friday morning, and the National Hurricane Center warned of life-threatening flash urban flooding, including numerous significant landslides, and EPA is working closely. So they have issued a pretty handy webpage here with this stuff here. So flooded homes, we'll do that one. FEMA resources. So we are working with our state partners to assess the damage. Now, with this, we are working with our state partners going through. Be careful of working with generators. Again, that's where people have a problem. We continue to deliver critical size to impacted areas, including meals, water, generators, tarps, and other supplies. So if you're going to be looking at this from a disaster preparation mode, they've already told you what their priorities are. Meals, water, generators, tarps, and whatever the other things are you may need. So probably in your disaster preparation stuff, what should you have? Meals, water, generator, tarps. Four things right there. Again, these people lost everything from what I'm seeing. And a lot of my wife's coworkers are giving a lot of information out there. So then we're stranded until yesterday. So I'm not, not a unique case here. I'm just saying, that's happening here. How to recover. Now, here with this. Now, I had to go through a couple years ago a FEMA application here to get and we got a grant here, just for a complete disclosure. All the information that they request, that's the paperwork you should have somewhere. So if this is impacted here, you should have the paperwork there, wherever it is your evacuation area is. Friend, relative, something like that. There are some people who, and I'm not saying you should do this because there are problems with doing this. Some people have a safety deposit box, like a couple of states away, where they have this stuff there in the bank. There's problems with a safety deposit box, especially if there's a fatality or a death if someone, for that. I mean, it's a big nightmare, but that's what people sometimes have. It's just stuff available because I tell you what, those applications are extensive and they are a pain in the neck. I was the one who handled it with us. My wife was handling everything else. I'm the one who handled this. And I tell you what, it was a big freaking deal. And I can't imagine losing everything and then trying to figure out, apply for one of those disaster assistance loans or a grant. Sometimes they give out a grant. So here we have recovery after hurricane here. Prepare for hurricane. We were talking, right, now recovery. Here, EPA's emergency response capabilities. And they have a big, long report here. Emergency response. You're a good PR thing. And there's all different reports here where the EPA is involved. Let's see. They have a YouTube video. I don't know if this will come over. That ain't going to work. You got too much reverb. But basically, you could go over there, EPA.gov. They have a nice video. So make any preparations that can minimize injury and property damage. So one of the first rules that you want to know is, in responding to any of this, is do not become part of the problem. So, you know, do not make your situation worse. So make preparations that can minimize injury and property damage. Households, utilities, and businesses should plan for a disaster before hurricane season starts. This is what the problem is. Unless you're on the coast, right? Unless you're on the coast, you're not really thinking of hurricanes. And as I point out, it takes roughly 2 weeks to get prepared for this stuff. Jimmy, that's not... Yeah, it does take... right, and this is a 30-day scenario, what we call a scenario 3, 30 up to 30-day long. How the hell are you going to prepare for that in 1 day? You ain't. You have to do this over a couple of weeks or something. Just think about it. I mean, we had a little disruption here in the supply chain, which we're going to be dealing with over the next month with the ports. Right on strike on the East Coast. It's going to take roughly 40 days to recover from this 1 week outage here, by some estimates. Some estimates are 28, some are 40. Here, so let's not, I mean, they're out of toilet paper here. Some of the stores, I'm seeing things on social media from legitimate sources. Some of my friends. So, again, remember. You can make the list, do an assessment, right? Find out, right? Assess, analyze, and act. So, for example, let's say that you need water, right? 2 gallons of drinking water a day per person. You have 4 people in the house. That means you're going to have 8 gallons a day. In a 5-day period, 40 gallons. And 1 month period, 30 days, 240 gallons. If my mind is working right tonight, 240 gallons of water. You think, are you going to go down to your local shopping club and pick up, or supermarket, pick up 240 gallons? Guess what? You may get on some kind of watch list if you do that. Okay, well, we're going to put it in drums. Okay. How many drums? Where are you going to store that? Well, how about a pool? Well, we got the pool. Okay, how are you going to purify that water? Make sure it's safe to drink. You understand it's a big freaking deal here. So here we have, make it drinking water. Keep at least 3 days. Let's switch on back to here. Make a kit at least 3 days. Here, and this is from, they kick you on over to, right, they say 1 gallon per person per day for several days. Well, guess what? It's going to be 2 gallons, right? Food, and let's not forget your furry friends. Battery-operated stuff, and this goes on and on and on here with this. Big weird thing is this one, local maps. You're going to say, well, Jim, why is that weird? How many people can read a map nowadays? Come on, how many people can actually read a map? The answer is not too many. Believe me, how did I learn how to read a map? I'll tell you how. I was on a bus trip down to Florida. We went to Disney. And on the way back, remember, 1981. No, I went with my brother John and the scouts. There was no internet. I didn't even have a transistor radio. I had to listen to all this baloney all over the place. In the day, I would have brought a, no, I bring a transistor radio everywhere. Well, guess what? One of the older gentlemen found out how bored I was, and he said, and they stopped at a travel center, and he went and got me roadmaps and an atlas. And he taught me, he said, I don't know who the guy was even. He sat me down and taught me how to read a map. So I had something to look forward to. What's coming up? So that's how I learned to read a map. Again, people don't have that. Water and wastewater skills. Now, the whole thing is this. right? Where are you going to go juvenile? Right? With men, at least half the time, it's not a problem. So here we have an emergency response for drinking water and wastewater utilities. How about what you're going to do? If you're involved in a disaster, maybe you can't flush your toilets. Superstorm Sandy, they, God bless those people. They did keep the water running and wasn't treated. They said, don't drink that water without treating it, boiling it, blah, blah, blah. But at least you're able to flush the toilets. And they tell us it was safe enough to shower with. Okay, great. Well, now, so we had the things covered there. Imagine not being able to take a shower for a week or two. Going to be smelling a little bit ripe there, and there's a sanitary issue. And also, what if the toilets aren't flushing? You don't have water. You don't have access to water. Okay, or maybe your septic system is flooding out in the vacuum. What are you going to do with that? And you know what? I'm going to bookmark this page because I tell you what, this is actually really good here, right? With this. Planning for disaster debris. Damage from a hurricane depends on the size, extent, and other factors. Damage debris can include destroyed structures, hazardous waste, green waste, or personal property. So they have a disaster debris planning thing. Now, one of the things that we learned is the most valuable thing you can have is an old-fashioned chainsaw, right? With that, non-electric. Why? Why non-electric, Jimmy? Why? You don't have electric, you can't operate a chainsaw. The other thing is this. This is where it pays to know your neighbors here. What's your capacity? We have an EMT. We have a firefighter. We have a retired pediatrician right up the street here. We have a landscaper with all different types of power equipment. You got me, and the guy next door is Mr. Fix-It. Believe me, the guy next door, phenomenal mechanic. Phenomenal mechanic. Tell you what, great guy. What's your capacity on your street with everything? Right, in your little neighborhood. Get to know your neighbors. Right, with everything. With that, maybe someone has a chainsaw, somebody has chains, so you can start pulling debris out, things of that nature. And again, don't make your situation worse with anything. All right, flooding, limited contact with flood water, and mold. Mold is a serious issue, and drinking water. I tell you what, all the fraud that comes out, now, I left the mold business because I couldn't compete with people doing fraudulent stuff. Much better salesperson than I am, believe me. And what are you going to do? Managing the debris? Do you have plastic bags? How are you going to do things? So what I would try to do is put things out toward where it's easy to get. So you don't pile all your debris in your backyard. I would pile it on the front yard by the street. This is the kind of stuff that people do because now it's harder to get the debris to the front yard. How are you going to do that? Simple planning. And you're just saying, even you're just saying, Jimmy, you're full of guvno. Guess what? Okay, maybe I am, but at least you're thinking about it. Maybe at least start the conversation. And there are other hazardous things with lead in the homes and asbestos, which are very extensive. So that's with that. Flooded homes, cleanup guidance, and here's the EPA guidance here. And they talk about some do-it-yourself stuff here. Now, we should probably do a program on PPE. Maybe that's a program for next week. Now, programming next week. We got a lot of exciting things going on here in the New York area. So this weekend, if you're around the New York City area, friend of the program, the Coppola family and their organization, the Pulaski Day Parade, they're having a big thing going on. So on Sunday, I will not be there. I have a lot of family stuff to do this weekend with things. People who know me know what that is. All right. number one. Number two is we have the Mets. So we will be enjoying, we'll just leave it as a, we'll be enjoying some of the festivities with the Mets and what is it, the National League Championship Series, right? With the Mets. Is I always get this screwed up here. Hold on. And I know I'm going to have it right. National League East, right? National League thing. So with the Mets, we're getting involved in some of the festivities this week. So we may not be on the air every day, but we're going to try to. We may be doing reports from the field. Now, here we have. This goes to show you. There are organizations out there, right? I'm a member of a couple of them. But people have been calling them crazy for years, and then all of a sudden, they ain't so crazy anymore. Right? They use a conspiracy theorist. And I know Safety Wars sounds like a conspiracy thing. But we let things cloud our judgment with everything. And it's like, you have to learn what is true, what is not true. You got to learn to hear people out, and you need to use some kind of judgment. Because we were told for years that this wasn't a thing, but now a federal judge has ordered something here. The end of fluoridation of U.S. water could be in sight after federal court ruling. And this is from a couple of days ago with this, right? This is from the Guardian.com. A judge has ordered an EPA risk assessment and fear that an additive that strengthens teeth could harm children's IQs. For decades, drinking water fluoridation opponents were often portrayed as a fringe element and conspiracy theorists. But a federal ruling in the U.S. may put an end to the practice and marks a pivotal point in their campaign to convince the public and policymakers of the substance's dangers for infants' developing brains. Armed with a growing body of scientific evidence pointing toward fluoride neurotoxicity, public health advocates say the legal win shows that they are overcoming institutional inertia and the unwillingness of federal public health agencies to admit they have been wrong. So if they are proven wrong, my question is this, how do we have some type of restitution here? Oh, it's that sovereign immunity thing that comes up again, huh? Where people can make any decisions they want and do whatever the hell they want, and there's no accountability, right? It's enough. The order last week requiring U.S. EPA to begin the process of strengthening fluoride regulations represents a landmark legal win that has long been in the making, says Stuart Cooper, director of Fluoridation Action Network Advocacy Group. Goes on and on. So next time you hear someone yell conspiracy theory, maybe you should hear them out a little bit. Because we know we are beaten. There was what started out a lot of this stuff. You know you are being lied to. You are being groove-noed. I don't like to say the other thing. This is a family show. You're being lied to on so many different levels here. Learn the truth. How many times have we lied about with the Heinrich pyramid here? And then again, Bird's pyramid. It says one thing in the research, and then they go and they use it the other way. Lawyers and HR get a hold of it, and people who really don't give a damn about your workers' health and safety. Like this one guy we didn't cover tonight, because I'm trying to get more facts, where allegedly told his workers they couldn't go home and they were all dead from the Hurricane Helene. I don't know if that's true or not, but we're not going to comment on that until we get more information here. So that's all I got for tonight. It's been great this week broadcasting. We got 4 programs in this week. That's a great thing, and I hope to see you next week with everything. And let's do this. And here's the outro. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.